You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
And I am JP Mosher.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. Oh, it's good to be back.
Come on, season 10.
Season 10. Oh, it just feels good.
Let's go.
Kickstarting season 10 in grand fashion.
Yes.
Y'all know we go epic on openers, and we're going all 80s in August.
Yeah,
as we are 80s kids, and maybe no song is more 80s than our season 10 opener.
That is 100% true. This song is, it's the 80s and the future all at the same
yeah,
time.
That's
you
great.
Know what I mean?
I love that. I love that. Rob, tell them what song we're playing, by who, and even who we're hanging out with at the end.
Massive worldwide smash single by the band NXS. This is Need You Tonight.
Come over here.
Okay. I'm in the bathroom. Hold on.
All you got is a small man. 21st century is yesterday.
You can Dude, care all you that. Want.
You can't help the sense.
Good, it's great.
It does something good to your soul.
So slide over here and give me a moment. Your moves are so raw. I've got to let you know. I've got to let you know.
Man, every instrument is so perfect.
Cause I'm not sleeping. There's something about you, girl, that makes me sweat.
Goodness
All right.
gracious.
That is, there's so much to dig into on this song. That is Need You Tonight by NXS from the 1987 album Kick, written by Andrew Ferris and Michael Hutchence. We will be hanging out with Andrew Ferris of NXS at the end of this episode. It's going to be a rollicking good time with an Australian accent. It's going to be amazing. One of these days, we're going to interview someone who is either from the UK, from Australia, Wales. Wales is part of the UK, I think. Anyway, from the UK, from Australia, and we're going to try and fake an accent. I'm going to. I don't know if you will, but I've almost worked up the nerve to do it, to try and just see if I can
Match with them?
Yeah.
Or to just lay on like super Southern.
No, not super Southern.
We just want to thank you for coming on the Great Song Podcast.
No, I want to see if I can... if I can get somebody who is not from the United States to reasonably believe that I might be from their country, they'd know it in a second, a nanosecond, even though I might be thinking I'm doing really well. Yeah. They'd be like, you're definitely American.
And I would be like, man, that's good. You got it. Let's go. Yeah. Let's jump in.
Nailed it. It's like my impressions. It's like most of my impressions.
We go, Shaggy's pretty good.
That's so good. And they would like, be like, okay, whatever. All right, so anyway, that's Need You Tonight by NXS from the huge, huge 1987 album Kick. It went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and the U.S. Cashbox chart. and in top 10 in several other U.S. charts. Went to number 2 in the U.K., Canada, and Ireland, and number 3 in the band's native Australia and New Zealand. The song was so big, it even charted on the Billboard R&B/hip-hop chart, reaching number 73 on the hip-hop chart.
Wow.
This song went to. That's insane. It was the number 2 Billboard song for all of 1988. Number 1 was Faith by George Michael. And it is the number 431 song on the Billboard all-time 600 chart. All right, all right. I didn't look up what was around it. I always do that.
You always do that. Yeah.
I didn't look it up. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Let's guess. It just edged out.
Let's see. It just edged out something by Bobby Darin.
Okay.
And I don't even know. And then, or like Leader of the Pack or something like that. And then it just got beat by like Lollipop by
Indian Reservation by the Raiders.
There you go. Yeah.
You know that one?
No,
Cherokee
I do not.
Cherokee people.
Oh. Oh, okay. I only know it because it's referenced in Indian Outlaw by Tim McGraw.
That's right. Okay. That's good. Yeah. That's why I was trying to go a little older.
Random.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's the list. It's pretty much older and random. Yeah.
Yes, it is very random. Okay. Let's do a few listening notes. We got to go back. I was saying this while it was playing, but it bears repeating. There are like 4 distinct sections to this song, and it's not necessarily you go, that's verse, chorus, bridge, mm-hmm. tag. It's like it just has sectioned parts, and it doesn't really matter.
The only part that I would think you know what it is the I need you tonight. That's got to be the chorus because that's the name of the song.
Right.
If they called it You're One of My Kind, maybe, I don't know. You can call it what you can call it so many things.
Yeah, it could, right? But each section just feels like a fresh thing, and it's its own. You go, oh, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you anticipate sort of it coming, and it's a relief when it gets there. And it's just, and obviously Michael Hutchence's voice is, he sings with so much confidence. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Swag. He has swag.
He has definitely swag. And it's like, he says, what's the line? He says, oh, your moves are so raw, I've got to let you know. You can only say something like that if you're like a 2000s hip hop artist.
Uh-huh.
You can say that. Otherwise, you have to look and sound
like Michael
and act like Michael Hutchence to be able to say that, like to a woman, to go, you know what, girl, your moves are just so raw.
We get slapped.
I had to let you know. Yeah. Only Michael Hutchence can get away with that, and a very few other people
in history.
We
can't even say that to our wives without getting slapped.
Babe, I just wanted to tell you, your moves are so raw. You're one of my kind, you know? Nah, it's insta slap. Yeah. There you go. Like, what are you doing? That's what we would do for our wife. What are you? Are you trying something? What are you? What
go
is
back
this?
To faking the Australian accent.
Yeah. Okay. Let's first go back to the opening, like just the groove of this song.
Man,
instantly recognizable.
Yeah.
You got Needs Unite. Come over here. And it's not like it's not some special configuration of drum sounds. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's not some like rhythmic thing that only belongs to this song, but you know it immediately. That's the drum loop from Need You Tonight. But it's like, it's a kick drum and a like a rim click kind of thing.
It's not In the Air Tonight, Phil Collins, you know.
Yeah, it's
that.
That's pretty good. That was okay.
That's not bad.
It's not terrible. And it's a shaker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, but you instantly go, oh yeah, that's Need You Tonight.
Yeah,
maybe it's the rhythm of the like cross sticking.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that is like kind of non standard.
Just the snare. I mean,
that snare sound.
It's
true.
I could put that snare sound in any song I record and be happy.
Make it sound. Yeah, it'd be cooler. Yeah, for sure. Then you get this guitar riff. Are there any greater? I kind of talked over it, but are there any greater clean guitar riffs than this?
Man.
They are few and far between if there are any. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, you'd have to start making arguments for like Jerry Reed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Johnny or like, be good.
Yeah. But that's not clean. It's not a clean riff. It's kind of clean-ish. I guess I don't think of it as clean, but it probably is. Yeah.
Because we don't play it clean. When we play it, we're freaking
cranking up that. Yeah. Every knob.
Turn off the boss DS1. Yeah, that's right.
Bring me my metal zone. But it's, you know, it's like, first of all, if you're listening on headphones, which I recommend, you hear that the first part is on the right side. It's actually played by, I believe, two different guitars. And the first part is on the right side. The second part is on the left side. And it's a, it is indicative of something this song does through the whole song, where the first part of it is a C major chord. Beep, beep, beep. That means it's ga, 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 ga. That's what makes it major. That's an E. Da, 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 da. And you hear that. Ba, ba, ba. And then the second part is C minor.
Which would be right? The E flat note. Which
is, yeah, E flat, D, C. Okay, so it's going. Bum, 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 bum. Then. Right? And this song is doing that through the whole track. You're hearing the sort of layering of the intermingling of major and minor through this whole track, okay? So you're going to hear it a lot. You're going to hear it in the verse, which has a, well, let's just keep going. Did I change keys in my brain? Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so your bass line is dun, 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 dun. Okay, and that's 1 flat 7 1, mm-hmm. 4 flat 3 4. It's a minor riff. Boom, 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 boom. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the synth part.
What's the. Yeah, what are that?
The synth part is a C major chord.
Really? Yes. Over a C minor riff.
Over a C minor riff. Sorry. Boom, 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 boom. Right? It's,
yeah.
It's got that major. So let's take a listen. Go back.
21st century is today.
Boom, 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 boom. Now it's in a space.
Yeah. Gap, so it's not playing over the...
It's not rubbing over, you know, directly.
If it was over the E flat note of that, it would be gross dissonance.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's in the space.
And the vocal melody is minor, right? 21st century is yesterday. That's minor, right? That's a 4-3-4-3-4-3-1.
It ends on the 1,
yeah,
so uh-huh. It doesn't matter what you play in that
right.
space.
But the whole, I need you tonight, mm. It's a very minor, yeah. That's a natural minor melody. Mm-hmm. That is a flat 3, flat 7, flat 6. Like, that's
oh, wow.
Natural
okay.
minor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, everything about the melody itself is minor,
mm-hmm.
and the riff is all minor, except for the bam, 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 right? That part alone is mm-hmm. major, and the synth chord is major.
Yeah.
It's a really...
That's cool.
...odd kind of thing, but it works. And obviously, it's something that has never bothered anyone in the history of time.
Nobody even talks about it.
Yeah,
thanks for talking about it.
So here's a great thing about the riff. Andrew Ferris wrote the riff while a cab was waiting to take him to the airport. Did you see this?
I saw that, yeah.
Okay, so he and
it
Michael Hutchins...
in his head...
Yeah, he and Michael Hutchins had been sent to Hong Kong by their producer to write some additional music for the album to finish it off. And on his way to the cab that was supposed to take him to the airport to go to Hong Kong, he gets this riff. And so the story goes that he tells the cab, just wait here. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. Just hang out here. An hour later, after he goes to his hotel room, picks out the part, demos it on a little cassette player, you know, whatever. Then he comes back and the cabbie's like, what the heck, bro? But I guess fare's running the whole time.
Yeah.
So whatever, cabbie just sitting in the air conditioner, but trying not to double park. But like, so anyway, he wrote this, you know, what becomes like the signature riff of the band. Yeah. You know, on his way to the destination that they were supposed to go to write more music.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, at that point, if it's you, do you still go, good.
Yeah.
Like, you wonder, because I guess he probably didn't, maybe he did know immediately, like, oh, this is it. This is what we're waiting for.
Well, then we still have, just because you have the riff, and you still got to go get the other
it's
part.
It's true, it's true.
So I run to that plane.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm like, I jump off the plane, and I'm like, guys, I got this.
And I think, if I recall correctly, that the story goes that basically the song came together very quickly
mm-hmm.
After that, and this one is an easy song to write, I believe. Okay, some more listening notes, just in general. The bass tone and sparseness of the bass part, okay? The bass is so...
Okay, yeah.
There's so much...
So slide over here and give me a moment. Your moves are so raw.
Like, it's even the bass drops out.
I've got
no bass.
You know.
Thin bass. You know what I mean? Just so, I mean, you could have full meals in between bass lines in some spots of this song.
Eat a sandwich, set it down. comes my other part.
So tasty. Yeah. The production as a whole is both very sparse, but also very full and busy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's always something going on. Even there's a couple spots where you can just hear him kind of like pick sliding, doing like a clean pick slide over his pickups, where it's like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just random stuff here and there, you know. But nothing ever gets in the way. It all stays very cool.
Yeah.
It like the whole thing has just got this sheen of just very cool.
They don't interfere with each other in all that they're doing.
No.
In any way.
That's what I'm saying. It's very busy, but there's a lot of space both rhythmically and like sonically. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of space. And then you get these great spots where, you know, Hutchins is playing it cool for like the first half of the song. It's all, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. I got to let you know. And then he
dude, lonely.
Yeah, I'm lonely. Right.
He's like, here I am.
So rock star.
It's
I'm lonely. Dude. We also get some distorted guitar in this section, doubling the bass line. And then it's back to clean and cool, you know?
Man, that's good. Like,
the only guy cleaner and cooler than Michael Hutchins in this like decade of time period is Jake from California Dreams.
For real. Leather and loose, man. Come on. Vote for Jake.
He's leather and loose. And Michael Hutchins is clean and cool.
That's it.
Right?
I love it.
They're maybe two ends of the same spectrum.
That's so good.
Shouts out to anybody who remembers
Anthony Frank.
And who watched California Dreams. We have talked, have we not talked for years about trying to get
about
some
getting
of
one of
California
them.
Dreams.
We know y'all listen every week. Brent Gore, go ahead and shoot us a text.
That's right.
Come on.
Yeah.
We're here. Jenny Kwan, anybody. We're in it.
That's right. Kelly Packard.
Oh, man.
Right?
We're just running through
the
list.
Let's just do
right
it. All right. Big California Dreams fans over here, if anybody's wondering.
Because we're surf dudes with attitudes. Y'all know that from Tennessee. That's us.
Okay. Let's move on. Unless you got other notes on the song, I want to talk about the video for a minute.
Yeah, let's jump. I'm glad that you said let's talk about the video because this song is MTV.
Yeah.
I remember this on MTV as much as any, with the black and white to the color. So please talk about the video.
Okay, so the full video of this song combined Need You Tonight with Mediate, which is the following track on the album, which actually in some presses is listed as Meditate, not Mediate, has an extra T in there, depending on the album pressing that you have. It combines live footage and animation, the Need You Tonight portion. The animation was created by filming the band members, making photocopies of the footage, and then pasting those photos back over the original footage. So it's kind of like rotoscoping, where they film something live and then animate over the top of it, but it's with photocopies instead of line drawings. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like if you watch the video back, you go, oh, that's why it looks like a newspaper clipping when he's singing. So it'll have the live band in the background, and then Hutchins will be up front, or different shots, Andrew Ferris, that kind of thing. And they'll sort of look like a, you know, paper. It's because it's literally, they pasted frame by frame photocopies of the live footage back on top of the footage. So that's the unique sort of animated look. The Mediate video, which immediately follows the full long form video, is a tribute, as are a million other videos, to Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues. We all know this sort of trope.
I think we ask him about the cards on the interview.
Yeah, I think we do.
I think, like, what's his most memorable card or
yes,
what the date
that's
is.
Right.
So.
And it's this thing where they're like lyrics and phrases on big cue cards, you know, that whoever's singing or the band, they reveal as those lyrics come up, you know, during the song. And so that is the nod there in the Mediate portion of the video. If I had one hot take on this song, it would be that I don't want to hear Mediate.
Really?
After Need You Tonight.
Okay.
I got no problem with Mediate. I don't want to hear it after Need You Tonight, at least not right away.
Okay.
When Mediate comes after, for me, it's too close to the ending of Need You Tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And the bare ending of Need You Tonight doesn't get to breathe. Because it ends like, here's how it ends. Slide over here and give me a moment. I've got to let you know. I've got to let you know. You're one of my kind. And that's how I think the air should just hang a little bit. But when Mediate follows, it's like okay, right there immediately that it kicks back into that groove. Mm-hmm. And for me, I would like to let the song, you know, song breathe, whatever. That's good. No, that's super good. Nitpicky about a classic thing here.
No, that's good. I understand, like.
But it's cool. It's fine. But and it turns out that Mediate was, it was a different song. But what happened was, I can't remember, they were working through it, or Andrew was playing through it for the producer or something, and the loop for Need You Tonight happened to be playing in the background. And they just went, why don't we just, you know what I mean, kind of keep this, it's almost becomes like a coda or something, you know, a postlude, is that the word? You know, whatever, to Need You
Reprise?
Tonight. Reprise? So, yeah, reprise almost in a way, yeah. So anyway. Very cool. Okay, so the video itself won 5 VMAs, including Video of the Year, for which it beat out both Where the Streets Have No Name and I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2.
Bono's still bitter about that, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. And then here's just a random thought about NXS. It got me thinking about the Mount Rushmore of Australian music acts and who that would probably be. Now, NXS is definitely on it. And I don't know, like, I know we have Australian listeners. I don't know if you guys have an equivalent of like Mount Rushmore, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a monument in Australia that has like 6 faces on it. And so when they make this list, it's 6 people or whatever. But for us, it's 4, right? We're over here in the States. We got the Mount Rushmore with 4 presidents' heads on it. And so we do these things in groups of 4. So I was trying to think who would be the Mount Rushmore of Australian musical acts. That might be a weird question to spring.
Off the cuff, yeah. I mean, my initial gut is Minute Work.
Yeah.
You could put Colin on there, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Then Crowded House, maybe.
You got to give AC/DC a spot.
AC/DC, yeah.
Right. You think Crowded House would be on the Mount Rushmore of Australians?
If you ask Australians, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I would think, hear them talk about them all the time.
Yeah.
And obviously NXS, I think.
I think NXS, AC/DC are shoe-ins.
Yeah.
Probably Minute Work. Right.
Who's number 4?
And then
looking it up, I don't know.
I was
going
to say, we're going to have to look it up and think.
I feel like we've talked to some other people from Australia.
Yeah, we have, sure. I almost said Andrew Ferris, of course. Okay, so we paused here and looked up a few just to kind of refresh our brains. So I'm going to throw a few names at you, and now we start to think about, okay, so Crowded House is what you're saying, and I'm saying probably Minute Work, okay? Mm-hmm. But some of these really make their own argument. Kylie Minogue, like, not that huge over here. She had a moment, but, like, worldwide, she's huge. Sia, Olivia Newton-John.
I didn't know the Bee Gees were Australian.
Oh, of course. Bee Gees. Forget it. Bee
Gees are on there.
Bee Gees are 100%
Air Supply,
on it.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Tell you who's not making it, even if we have to kick them off the Mount Rushmore, is Savage Garden. Somebody tries to throw them on. Me and Rob are coming We're throwing elbows and everything.
I'm
bringing my own chisel.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to chisel his nose off. How about Keith Urban?
How did we not think about
it? Argument could be made.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. And if they're smart, they put him because they gain another fan base for their mountain visitors. They're like, all these people from Nashville are going to come visit the Mount Rushmore now Keith Urban's up there. See,
yeah. So there's, there's some really interesting names on that list. And some folks that I didn't know even were Australian. Tommy Emmanuel?
Okay.
I didn't know that. This list also lists Flea. Is Flea Australian and I just didn't know? I've heard the guy talk a lot. Flea, seriously, Australian listeners, do you claim Flea? I'm totally unaware of this, if that's just wrong on this.
What's the most un-Australian? Like, if somebody threw him on there, they're like, there's no way.
Right, like Bruce Springsteen.
Tracy Lawrence.
Yes, good. Tracy Lawrence, absolutely. Okay. Tracy.
Paint me a Birmingham. Throw him on that mountain.
Yes. Australia, do you claim Tracy Lawrence?
Hey, guys. Okay. Is this a good place to stop and talk about some actual Australians?
Yes.
Let's meet the band.
Let's do it.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right. right, guys, let's meet the band of NXS that were on this track. Lead vocals, we've talked about him already, Michael Hutchins. He was in a band called Max Q. He acted in a movie called Dogs in Space.
Okay.
Everybody's favorite movie. He died in 1997 at age 37. I got this from Wikipedia, so I can't take credit for this. Robbie and Mr. Perfect Pitch could probably help her. He was a baritone whose vocal range spanned from a bass B1 to a high tenor F-sharp 5.
Okay.
That's a pretty decent range.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of neat. I don't know how they keep that on record. Like, do you stretch them? Do you be like, okay, come hit the highest note you can?
I would just guess, in his case, that probably somebody went through the recorded works
and said, Ryan, this is the highest
note he hits, and this is the lowest.
That's good.
Because that's like, you're one of, that's a G, you're okay. One of, right? So he at least has, he goes down to that. It said he went to a B.
B.
So
B,
there's no way he goes down to a B below that.
Base B1. Because
that'd be an octave below this note, right? That would be a B below that. So maybe he does.
Maybe
he gets... Yeah, and
super growly,
and maybe it's even some of it's with his spoken tone, because a lot of times people will go lower with their spoken tone. He'll go, you know, slide over here, you know, you get like the way he does it.
I like that he slides here.
Yeah, slide over here.
Anyway,
and it said an F
sharp five.
So I wonder, because his high note in this was I'm lonely, which is a G.
That's a G.
So that means they're saying that he would have.
Almost a step above that. One note.
No. An F sharp would be a half step under that.
I'm saying so, a whole octave above that.
If that's an F sharp five, I don't really know where the numbers are on the keyboard, but that feels wrong to me either way.
Jacob Collier, is that right?
That's right. Both of those notes feel wrong to me, mm-hmm. honestly, based on what I.
That's why I made sure to Hutchins's say voice. This came from Wikipedia. So we've not fact checked.
It'd be interesting.
This,
I'd like to know.
Okay, Tim Ferriss, guitars. I like this. This is a neat fact. I wouldn't say I like it, but it's a neat fact. He had to have surgery to remove an abnormal bone growth in his leg, and his brother John had the same thing too. So both of them had an abnormal bone growth in their leg.
Wow.
So great nickname for a guitar player, the Riff Meister or Riff Sheriff.
The Riff Sheriff?
The Riff Sheriff.
Oh, man, that's what I want to be called. Dang it.
If you're the Riff Sheriff, then I'm the Riff Deputy. I'm the Barty Fife to your Andy Griffith on guitar.
Man, I have never like been jealous of a nickname, I don't think, like, where I went, I want that.
Yeah.
I want to be the Riff Sheriff.
They came up with that as live at Wembley Stadium. Hutchins told him, play the effing riff, Timmy. And so after that, he became the Riff Sheriff.
Okay.
So I guess all you got to do is play at Wembley, and I'll just yell at you, Rob, play the riff. And then
we'll just see what nickname that births for
comes
me.
Out. You know. That's right. he's very private and enjoys deep sea fishing and cricket. Can you name one other person off the top of your head that likes cricket?
No.
Because I can't.
I don't know nothing about cricket.
As much as we love baseball, you would think we would have a basic understanding of cricket, but I can't explain cricket at all.
No, nothing.
Other than it's a really cheap phone. I know we're about to get sponsored by Cricket Phone.
Cricket Wireless, yeah.
That sounds kind of like our podcast. We're kind of a Cricket Wireless podcast. No, but they, man, you could be like on the tower at cricket and they'd be like, net service unavailable. You're like, I'm standing on your tower.
I think I know more about Quidditch than I do cricket.
I don't even know what Quidditch is.
The fictitious Harry Potter sport.
Is that the one where they ride on the broom and they throw the
Throw a quaffle and there's a golden snitch and the snitch is worth 100 points or 150 points or something, and the quaffle going through the hoop is worth 10. I literally know more about Quidditch than I do about cricket.
I only know that little part because I've only seen one Harry Potter, and it's Goblet of Fire.
Okay.
And I've seen it probably 42 times. As every time I walk in, my wife is watching that movie, and I'm like, it's the same one!
Is it Robert Pattinson? Is she a Robert Pattinson fan?
I don't know. Anyway. Okay, here we go. On guitars, also, Kirk Pingilly. Saxophone, backing vocals. So the sax part in Mediate, I think, is perfect. So go to minute 201. Here's some patient sax undergroove at its finest. Patient sax.
Patient sax is important.
That's right.
I just want you guys to know we practice patient sax.
This is a perfect example of not overplaying so much with so little. You could keep that in that same context of jokes if you want.
So this is Mediate.
Yeah.
This is the...
Don't be fooled. Yeah. Go to minute 201 around there. Dude, I freaking love that. It's so like, it's warm. It's awesome.
It is very like relaxing. Dang. It sounds like what they play as you're leaving the aquarium.
That's great.
It's like,
make sure to stop by the gift shop.
Yeah.
Pick up your inflatable whale. I don't know. They don't have whales. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. That's good. That's good. I like that. On bass, Gary Beers.
There you go.
Great, great name there. He wrote Tangle With Your Mind with Scott Weiland for his solo project. He was a machine operator before NXS. I love pre-stories about what people were before they were in monster musical things. Because one day they're going to be like, that guy used to work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car before he went off and conquered the world. That's going to be my story. Yeah. So, yeah, I love that. I love that about him. On drums and percussion, John Ferris. We already talked about his leg.
Ben is chock full of Ferris.
Goodness gracious.
Ferris is oops. It's like the Cabin Crunch, Oops All Berries.
Yeah,
this Oops band All Ferris. Like, Oops All Ferris.
He wrote and performed the song Never Used to Cry on the 1984 film No Small Affair. Also producer of Richard Clapton and Jimmy Barnes projects, not to be confused with Eric Clapton and Dave Barnes, on keyboard and guitars, Andrew Ferris.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And I've got a segue. I know I did some talking there, but I want to segue into Stump the Genius with Ferris in mind. Okay, so play the jingle. Here we go.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. It's time to Stump the Genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right, we're going to play Stump the Genius Ferris Trivia.
First Stump the Genius of Season 10.
That's
here we
right.
go.
So I was telling Rob beforehand, we've done these Stump the Geniuses for a few seasons now, so I have to dig deep into my barrel of creativity to pull out these Stump the Geniuses. So I'm going Ferris, since we're talking to Andrew Ferris.
Okay.
And I'm
shooting for 80% this season.
Oh, okay.
That's my overall 80% on Stump the Genius.
Okay, let's see if he can start off good. So this is not, we're not really talking about Ferris Bueller, but this is mid-80s, 86, Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if you've ever seen the movie. Have you seen Ferris Bueller?
So, to my great shame, I think...
Okay.
I think I saw it when I was a kid.
Okay, you're fine.
But...
You don't have to have seen the movie to
best.
Do okay on this trivia.
Okay, all right.
Because I wasn't sure if you'd seen it, and I want to be semi-fair.
Okay.
Because if I did a whole thing about the movie, that's not
fair.
Yeah,
like everybody knows certain things about Ferris Bueller.
So I'm going to ask you questions about the cast.
Okay.
Because it's chock full of heavy hitters in the cast, and I'm going to try to make them, some of them will be true or false. Anyway, here we go. The lead is played by Matthew Broderick. He plays Ferris.
Yes.
Okay. True or false, is he the voice of the adult Simba in The Lion King?
Oh, Simba.
Simba.
No.
That is true.
Matthew Broderick?
Matthew Broderick is the voice of adult Simba in Lion King.
What?
The kid from War Games, Inspector Gadget. Yep.
Wow.
That guy. So, okay, you got to get 4 for 4 here to keep your 80%
Dang,
going. So
that just blew my mind.
There you go. So there's your nugget of goodness there.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas as little Simba.
Yeah.
Matthew Broderick
as adult Simba.
He was way not cool enough to be adult Simba, right? I mean, that's kind of his deals. I guess in Ferris Bueller.
Ferris Bueller is cool.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
That's true.
On we go. Alan Ruck, who plays Cameron Fry, who's Ferris's best friend.
Yeah.
He's also in Succession, a show I love. Three Fugitives. He's in Twister. Okay, I got a Twister question for you.
Okay, all right.
Okay. If I ask you to name the most popular Van Halen song from Twister, it's Humans Being.
Yeah.
Okay. What Van Halen song closes the Twister soundtrack?
That would be, I believe it's called Fear the Wind.
Respect the Wind.
Respect the Wind.
I don't know. That's a judgment
Come
call.
On.
I'm going to give you that one because it's wind related. Sounds like Vitamin, instrumental. I love it.
Respect the
Wind.
I was like, this is
I'm gonna
not
give you
right.
credit for that.
I know it's I not Chase the Wind. That's a Bible thing.
Maybe my bell's behind you. See if my bell's behind you. Okay. Ring for yourself. Boom. There you go. You can ring yourself on that one. Here we go. Okay. So we're 1 for 2. Jennifer Grey, who plays Jeannie Butler, who's his sister, also plays Baby in Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
So her film debut was in a movie called Reckless in 1984, starring Daryl Hannah. Okay. It had two tracks from a legendary 80s band. legendary Reckless. 80s band.
Okay. All right. That would be NXS.
NXS! Yeah! Go.
All right.
Nailed it. Good job. Well played, Rob, on that one. 2 for 3. Okay, we're cruising right along. Charlie Sheen plays the boyfriend of Jennifer Grey in this. Interesting fact I want to tell you real quick. He plays a guy on drugs. So to get that look, he stayed up 48 hours straight before filming to get that look. So,
I'm super surprised he wasn't just like, I just did the drugs. I mean, definitely later that became his method.
That was his thing. But okay, name the ABC show that he replaced Michael J. Fox on.
Spin City.
Spin City. Ring it. Yes. Okay. If you get this one, you've gone 80% to stay on that. Okay. Ben Stein, who's the economics teacher, the classic Bueller. Bueller is from this. Okay. Show I loved, Win Ben Stein's Money.
Great show.
Do you remember who the co-host was?
Jimmy Kimmel.
Jimmy freaking Kimmel. There we go. Done, Rob. Yeah. Good job. All right. 80%. Yay. That's a good start. Good start to the season. A side note, I wanted Mia Sara, who played Sloane Peterson, who's his girlfriend, on there because I thought she was super hot at the time. But these were just better questions.
Okay.
Good job.
Do you remember after Ferris Bueller came out, they did a TV version?
I don't remember that.
It was Ferris Bueller. I can't remember what the actual name of the show was. I don't think it was Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but I think it was maybe just Ferris Bueller, or maybe like Ferris Bueller, The Adventure Continues. I can't remember. I can see the guy that played him. Obviously, it was not Matthew Broderick. I want to say his name was like, I want to say his name was like Charlie something. I can't remember. And then there was a competitive / knockoff show, right? You know how like one thing becomes popular and they'll do, you get your, what's the thing on NBC? This Is Us, right? You get This Is Us, and then ABC comes out with a million little things, right?
You get that kind of thing. Felt.
Yeah. And so the Ferris Bueller TV show starts, and I think it was Fox came out with Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Parker Lewis, right?
Yeah.
That was my jam.
Okay.
I saw some Ferris Bueller, but Parker Lewis Can't Lose hit me just right.
Yeah.
And they were like synchronized watches and all this stuff. And they had the big guy that was like the bully, but he's like heart of gold. Anyway. Parker Lewis Can't Lose is my knockoff like dollar store. Ferris Bueller
story. That's good. I like that. We're going to And we're going to get the guys from the band Yellow that do the chicka-chicka.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a personal goal we just set for ourselves right now.
That's right.
So there you go. We'll get those guys.
Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about this legendary album, Kick.
Absolutely.
This is written entirely by the duo of Andrew Ferris and Michael Hutchence, which was the first time that just the two of them had been the sole writers.
Yeah.
And
which there's some controversy in that. If you guys want to watch the movie Never Tear Us Apart, it's really good. It's a little, it's the NXS story, so don't watch it with young eyes or anything, but it's good. It's really good. It digs into that a little bit.
Yeah. Basically, they paid no attention to what was going on in pop music at the time. Like, they didn't want to be influenced by anything that was happening, you know. Ferris said, anyone can write a song that sounds contemporary. We wanted our songs to sound like the future. And I think in the case of Kick, they absolutely succeeded. Like,
absolutely.
This sounds like it still sounds fresh, is what I'm saying, in long
the production.
Yeah.
It
all still hits exactly as good as it did, you know, when this came out. We'll talk about this too with Andrew Ferris, but when the album was initially played for executives at Atlantic Records in New York City, the executives rejected the album and they actually offered the band $1 million to just start over. Just wipe it clean and start over.
I'm so glad they didn't.
No kidding. Can you imagine?
Who says no to $1 million to just start over?
Yeah.
Like, that's belief in product.
Go make some more music and we'll give you $1 million.
Yeah.
But the band's manager, Chris Murphy, worked around the label's distaste by sending Need You Tonight to college radio, where it picked up steam quickly and convinced Atlantic to release the album in its original form.
Yeah.
So
what happens if you take that million, you make another album, and you still have that? Can you use that later in the future?
Right, yeah. If
it's not
surely
like you have to throw it away.
Release it.
Like, you could re-record it.
Call
even.
It remixes and B-sides, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. And I'm not 100% sure if they wanted them to write new songs or if they wanted them to reproduce the
same
album.
Song.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Either way, I'm glad they didn't and stuck to their guns.
Yeah, dude. It's, I mean, what we would have missed out on from this album, you know, had that happened.
Four charting singles. I mean, New Sensation, Never Tear Us Apart, Devil Inside.
Let's say that again, because let's go down this. Let's go down this album. Yeah, you've got
New Sensation.
Listen to this.
Never Tear Us Apart.
Come on.
Tell me 1975 didn't say that's some guitar.
Yeah. Got to at least get to the second riff, too. Dude. Just so much energy, like
they write guitar parts that are good to sing over and with.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just a cool guitar part for the sake of a good guitar part. It's a guitar part that you want to sing with.
True. Yes. Very it allows a lot of space for the rest of the song. Yes, absolutely. Then you get first of all, you got New Sensation, Devil Inside, Need You Tonight, Mediate back to back on this album. It opens with Guns in the Sky, and then you've got those four back to back. So you've got Devil Inside right after New Sensation, which this is maybe peak cool Michael Hutchence. Like, this is the chorus of this. He was not.
This is in all kinds of movies.
The thing about, oh yeah, you kid, yes, dude. The cool thing about Michael Hutchence was he never felt the need, and I guess Ferris as well, when they were writing the hooks and stuff, never felt the need to like blow you away by singing so high.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't about like even powerful whatever. Hutchence is just going to get up in your ear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Devil Inside. Devil Inside. Like,
yeah, he's not going to Steve Perry you.
Yeah.
He's not going to, they're not going to Def Leppard you with huge vocals.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's just crazy. He can say something like soft. It all just came from cool. He just oozed cool, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be like, could you pass the salt? And I'll be like, oh my God.
No, you know what he would say? Could you slide it over
here?
Oh,
yeah. Well done.
Give me the pepper. My food is so raw.
And I think it's getting cold.
Okay.
Pastrami on rye.
We're so stupid. All right. Why do you people keep letting us do this?
Guys, we love this. Andrew Ferris is listening to this episode about to say, hey, I wonder what these guys did with my interview. And he's like, who are these guys?
These idiots. Why have you people let us do this for 9 full seasons? Okay, all right. Nevertheless, we persist. And then you get on
pastrami on rye. I'm going to order that every time I go to Nixon's Deli.
And then you also have Never Tear Us Apart, Mystify. I mean, it's just crazy. All the stuff that's on that album, just so good. You know, such full stuff. It's like a funk rock fusion, taking elements from previous styles from their previous albums and just sort of putting them together. Previous albums like The Swing and Listen Like Thieves. The album itself went to number 3 on the Billboard 200. It went to number 9 in the UK, number 1 in Austria, Canada, and New Zealand. It was the number 4 album for all of 1988 in the US and the number 1 album in Australia for the entire year. Not a huge surprise there. I should have looked up what the top 3 albums in the US
were. I was curious if you were.
I almost always look that stuff up, and I didn't. It has sold 20 plus million albums, 10 million of those coming within the first 2 years of release. It is 6 times platinum in the US alone. Rolling Stone readers ranked it the number 3 album of all of 1988, and I do have the two above it if you want to take a guess.
Yeah. Oh, man. 88?
88. 88. I'll tell you, one of them is U2.
Okay, so that'll be Joshua Tree? No, that's before then. This would be, is Rattle and Hum?
Rattle and Hum is number 1.
Recorded at Sun Studios in Memphis.
Okay.
So they still have the same mic there set up. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Number 2 is might be a bit of a surprise, but...
Genre? Help me.
Genre, I'll say folk.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know exactly how to classify this artist.
I'm confused then.
Singer-songwriter.
Okay, from 88.
88.
Singer song. Is it Paul Simon?
No.
Then I don't know.
Who? It's Tracy Chapman.
Wow, how about that?
Tracy Chapman.
With Fast Car and Give Me One Reason. Yeah, that's a good album.
Yeah. Never, Give Me One Reason, I don't think it was on that album.
It's not different, on that album, yeah, that's later.
Yeah. Fast Car. It had Fast Car and, blah, 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 blah. Oh, come on, what's the other one?
I have it upstairs. I can go look at it.
Dang it. Anyway, Tracy Chapman, number two. Okay, there are a few covers of this song slash like interpolations. Let's do. I have one. Do you have any that you want to hit?
No.
Okay. All right. So let's do. This one is actually called "One of My Kind," okay. And it is by Rogue Traders. This is a 2003, essentially a remix of "Need You Tonight." It went to number one in the Australian dance and club charts, number 10 overall in Australia.
Rob hates this kind of music.
So, I do, typically. I like this. It's okay. Good. It's a creative remix that doesn't get on my nerves.
Okay.
Let me dig into it a little bit here.
Sped up his vocal part a little bit.
But you're right. Generally speaking, I do hate this kind of stuff. I'm not a big club dance guy. It's got a couple cool breakdowns in it. Okay, so there's that one, and that is actually called One of My Kind. And then there's this one, which is kind of a whole other thing, but I don't know if you know this song or not. This is Break My Heart by Dua Lipa.
Okay.
Have you heard this?
Oh, no.
Okay, so this is technically... I've always been the one. Barris and Hutchins are credited as co-writers because the guitar riff from Need You Tonight is interpolated into this song, okay? Interpolation in this context is when you use an established melody or a musical element, but rather than sample it directly, you re-record it. Okay.
Okay. So they didn't take it; they had somebody play it.
So they, and in this case, it's actually the vocal melody.
Oh,
so
like, vocal melody.
She's
going to
sing
line.
The guitar line. Yeah. It's cool. Here it comes.
I kind of like her.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm afraid of all the things it could do to me.
If I would have known it, babe. Here it comes. I would have stayed at
home. Cause I was doing better alone. I've heard this. When you said hello, I knew there was the end of it all. I should have stayed. I like the harmony part behind too.
Yeah, it's nice.
Hey, that's good.
It almost makes it sound like a harmonizer.
Yeah, you know, vocal harmonizer.
Yeah, anything.
Yeah, I like that.
Now, apparently, this is what they say. Apparently, the similarity was not intentional.
What?
And wasn't noticed until they were like listening back to the track or at least the demo.
Uh-huh.
But the writing and publishing credits to NXS were apparently a, like, we better cover our backside so we don't get sued.
We didn't realize we did this.
Yes.
Kind of
we just did it and then later went, oh, crap, that's that NXS thing. You know what I mean?
Well, that's cool that they caught that early. Surely somebody heard that and was like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah. Y'all didn't do that on purpose?
Their legal team's like, dude.
Yes, exactly. Like, take a lesson from Robin Thicke.
Yeah, and just exactly.
Go ahead and do it. Yeah, save yourself the legal fees and just do this.
Everybody
now.
Wins. You're going to make tons of money.
Right. Yes, exactly. The move apparently also was one that Dua Lipa kind of dug because the name of the album was already established as Future Nostalgia. Which
ooh, how about that?
Fits perfectly, right? And so that really played right into that kind of like, oh, this a blend, you know what I mean? Future Nostalgia is perfect for that.
That's a great album title, by the
really,
way.
Really, truly.
Good job, Dua Lipa, on that.
Absolutely. So, and there's I know...
The same legal team that caught that's like, we should call it this.
Yeah.
Pay that guy some money.
Right. We've talked about this. I know you and I have talked about this. We've had conversations with Dave Barnes, I think, off air about this, about the... sort of new wave of songs that are using nostalgia songs to bring popularity to their own songs in a way that they're like not even trying to be slick about it. What song was it? You sent me a song yesterday.
Yeah, the new Cole Swindell song is basically Heads Carolina, Tails California by Jody Messina.
Yeah.
It's like it same hook. He even uses a part of the song at the end.
Yeah.
Like takes it and puts it in there. It's not subtle at all. Yeah. But that is a brilliant play. And I'm like, surely, I heard it. I never heard it. And I was like, Come on.
I'm having to just give into it because I know it's going to happen more and more and more. And we've talked before about my disdain for like I almost said Chris Rock, the Kid Rock, All Summer Long,
basically,
where he uses
Sweet Home Alabama
and Werewolves of London.
Yeah.
And he's literally singing about Sweet Home Alabama in the chorus.
I don't like that. It's kind of lazy. It's like, come up with your own idea. Quit living in that. But
yeah,
dude,
that's my problem with it.
It's brilliant.
Like, yeah,
and
it is
so smart.
Because it immediately hooks people. Mm-hmm. It attaches your song to something people already love.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the closest, I just thought of this, it's the closest you can get to making music scratch and sniff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like this smells like something I already love. You know what I mean? Oh, I love strawberries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
that's great.
That's what I'm going to start calling that move. It's the scratch and sniff.
Maybe we'll do a whole, you know, we do themed months. Maybe we'll do a scratch and sniff.
People will be like, what the crap are you talking about?
Instead of stickers, we'll send everybody scratch and sniffs.
Yeah.
So I don't know what we would smell like. Never mind.
It just sounds disgusting. Scratch and sniff month coming soon on the Great Song Podcast. That's disgusting. All right. I think I'm about tapped.
I'm good.
Okay.
Let's hang out with why y'all really came, which is to hear Andrew Ferris.
Andrew Ferris,
goodness,
a freaking
gracious.
NXS. Let's go to that right now. We'll be back to tuck you in at the end. But first, stop what you're doing right now. And go to Great Song Pod on all the platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Give us a follow. Say hey, say hi, tell us where you're listening from. And make sure you join the Facebook group, Great Songs, and the great people who love them greatly. We put a lot of stuff out there first and kind of, you know, give teasers and you know, have a lot of fun in that group with a great little community that has been kind of built around the show, which is awesome. If you want to go the extra mile and help us make the show, if you want to be a producer, you can go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/greatsongpod. And when you support the show on Patreon, we can do everything that we can to say thank you. Bonus episodes, early releases, ad-free shows, goodies of just about every kind. We've given away full albums on there, you know, that kind of stuff. And so if you want to be a producer of the show, you can go to patreon.com/greatsongpod. We're going to talk to Andrew Ferris right now, and we'll be back at the end to tuck you in.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Andrew Ferris of NXS and many other things. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
How are you, fellas? You good?
Fantastic.
Excellent. Yes. Let's start here. We're gonna move quickly, but I got to know this. I understand that NXS was originally called the Ferris Brothers and then the Vegetables. Do you think you would have been as successful had you entered the world as the Vegetables?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, actually, I think it's a good name for a band, you know, but I think it was just a natural course of events that we would turn into Vegetables, getting into the entertainment industry in the first place. But I think it was more that, you know, there was three brothers, and I'm the middle one. You know, I got an older brother, Tim, and my name's Andrew, and my younger brother's name was John. Well, still are, as far as I know. But, you know, the course of events took it that, you know, the more successful we got in Australia in the very early years of the band, you know, someone had suggested the name NXS to us. And at first we were like, what? You know, especially where it was spelled. And then we thought, actually, it's really clever. And then the name stuck and it sort of suited what we were doing. And I think, you know, Michael Hutchins, you know, back then, he liked that because it wasn't about us brothers. But you could understand in the years that we were doing what we were doing, you'd had, you know, bands come out before us, you know, like the Doobie Brothers and, you know, Brothers Johnson, the Brothers thing. And so it felt right by the 80s to have that kind of name anyway, you know. Where the Vegetables part came in was actually a phrase I come up with because, you know, we were sort of living on nothing, playing 9 shows a week. And, you know, we literally had just about enough money to buy fruit and vegetables, not much else. And we started laughing about it one day. And we wrote a song called, you know, We Are the Vegetables, because we're kind of living off them, you know. But then again, worse, you could eat worse things than that, you know.
Sure. Absolutely. According to a biography about Michael, Gary Morris of Midnight Oil tried to convince you all to become a Christian band at some point. Is that a legitimate story, and did you guys seriously consider it?
Well, yeah, I mean, that actually happened. And, you know, with respect to Gary, I don't think he meant badly. I think he was more thinking, you know, of say, how, you know, U2, for example, had platformed themselves on that sort of moral ground, you know. Yeah. But ironically, you know, I already was a Christian, and I still am. You know, I respect all faiths and belief systems, as long as they don't hurt other people, you know.
Sure.
I think for Gary, you know, Morris, I think it was more he was trying to think of it as a marketing sort of strategy, but it had a kind of funny ending where Gary started talking about, I don't know what we were talking about in the end, spaceships or, you know, aliens or something. And we were like, hey, Gary, it's been really good talking. We got to go, man. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and I, right?
That's great.
You know, that was the part, really. It wasn't the Christian part. It was that part. You know, for me, anyway.
Well, yeah. I remember growing up a young kid in the 80s, and we're in Nashville. We both grew up in Tennessee, and in a pretty strict Christian bubble here in the southeastern U.S. And you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but NXS was one of the sort of bogeymen for the for the maybe religious right, I guess you would say. It was like Bon Jovi, NXS, Judas Priest, Ozzy Osbourne, all got sort of like breathed in the same breath as like, don't dare listen or you might not go to heaven, you know? So I remember, I was telling JP, I remember when I was a kid, like you would have to like avert your eyes from the NXS advertisements or they might make you think something bad. So I didn't know if you're aware of that, but like it was kind of the opposite. So the irony that you yourself are a Christian and that you were, you know, maybe considering becoming a Christian band was pretty ironic to us.
Yeah, well, that's when you put it like that, it makes total sense. Oh, well, it doesn't. It, but,
yeah.
You know, but, right. But I was going to say that I don't know what we were grouped with when we first started. When we first used to come to the United States in 83 and we started seriously touring, which we did for many years in the United States and many other countries, we ended up working in over 50 countries as a band during our touring career and recording career. But I was going to say that, actually, I was just in Nashville, and I was tracking some of my new solo country music stuff that I've been doing, and it was funny. You know, I was standing there with the musicians, and we're talking, and somehow that, you know, I don't know how, you know, we got into some sort of conversation about, you know, the afterlife, and I said, well, if this is heaven, it's kind of cool, you know, because we're standing around playing music, you know what I mean? Right, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's about as good as it gets, really. I mean, you know, you got family close by, and then everything's good. You know, like, hopefully, if I ever get to heaven, there'll be a great band there, and I can continue making some music. You know.
That'd be nice.
That sounds great. Well, I know you mentioned your solo project, so I'll jump there real quick, and then we'll go. I love All the Stars Are Mine. So good. Acoustic guitars sound great. I like playing in front of the fire as well. Did you come up with the video? Here's a reason I'm asking is this is where you take into your cool hat phase. I think you originally started your cool hat phase on Don't Change. Back in the, that's maybe my favorite song of yours back.
Right.
And then All the Stars Are Mine, there's the hat. Good Mama Bad, there's the hat again. Love Makes the World falls into the same category as All the Stars Are Mine, but no hat. So how involved are you in the videos, and did that start your cool hat phase?
Okay. Yeah, first of all, I have to say that, In my solo work that I'm doing now, Xander Saris, my wife Marlena, Saris is seriously involved in a lot of the art and direction of video making, which I'm now doing on my own. And I hand it to her, you know, because, you know, I think I know what it looks like. And she says to me, you're not going to wear that, are you? You know, and that's good for me. I need that. You know, I need some, you know, need some, what do you call it, reflection or whatever.
Direction.
But the thing is direction, but. Right. But I think, if not some, not even that, but in the early years with In Excess, we made hundreds of videos. We shot a full, you know, we shot a major motion picture, which was actually shown in theaters across the US and other countries recently for the Wembley Stadium show that we filmed. We didn't video it, we filmed it.
Wow.
And it was a serious production, the filmmaker and that whole thing. Check that out. That's our Wembley Stadium concert in 1991. But the thing is that a lot of the video idea with the hats and all that, I just thought I'd like to wear the hat, mainly because we used to play outdoors in a lot of festivals. I didn't want to get sunburned. I mean, that's the main reason I was wearing it. Because, most of my adult life, I've always wanted to be and ended up in agriculture. So music isn't the only thing I do. I'm a farmer, believe it or not.
Wow.
And, I've got a farm. I've owned two farms. The second one that where my wife and my family and I live, it's sort of kind of in the middle of nowhere in Australia, but we love living there. Most Australians live on the coast. But Marlene is originally from Ohio, and there's a lot of farmland still left around there. And I just hope to God they don't concrete it and build buildings all over it. You know, we need food,
Oh. I saw where you saw the Beatles play at age 5. Do you remember it? And if so, what's your most either vivid audio or visual moment of that show?
Well, complete shock is a good place to start. Well, because that's a long story, but for the Farris brothers, our father, Dennis, who sadly passed away, as is our mother, but, he used to be in the Royal Navy on aircraft carriers. And then when he finished that, it was around World War II finished, he came down to Australia, met my mother, who was Australian, but he hadn't been able to go back and see his parents or our grandparents. So he put us on a ship. So for 3 weeks, we set out on the ship, never been so seasick in my life, and we ended up in London. And in those years, people didn't fly around the world, They went by ship or you didn't go at all. And so we got there and some other Australians had heard we were in town. Our family was there. Sent by a television show. Well, we're sitting there, my brothers and I, and we're sitting in the front row and the Beatles walk out. We're like, well, that's pretty cool. We're looking at each other like, gee, this happens to everybody, right? and I can still remember more than anything, even though I was really young, everyone was really excited in the room. I can remember the television cameras, the big grey television cameras going back and forth. They were more interesting in some ways than the band because I thought they looked like huge big pterodactyls or some kind of dinosaur thing going back. But the whole thing was kind of sensory overload, to be honest with you. I remember saying, with my older brother to our dad one day, Dad, did that actually happen? Did we really do that? He said, oh, yeah, you were there. And afterwards, you went and talked to him.
That's awesome, wow. Dude. That's awesome.
Wow. Well, we stylistically, NXS reaching to several bags from new wave to funk to straight ahead rock. And obviously it seems like everybody we talked to, the Beatles influenced, everybody pretty heavily from that era. Who were some other acts that you listened to growing up that sort of helped you develop that, mixed, musical vocabulary?
Right. That's a really good question. Well, unlike where modern, especially FM radio, has gone all around the world in many ways, it segregates different genres of music, right?
Sure.
You've got rock, you've got country, you've got AOI, you've got, whatever it is. And it's R&B, hip-hop, it's all chopped up, But in the years when we were kids, especially, living in Western Australia, which is one of the most remote, I think it is the most remote place in the world that I know of geographically, they only had, the radio stations when we were kids, they would play every kind of music, And they would play everything from country to classical to, pops to whatever and all that kind of stuff. And, whatever it was, it could be instrumentals, could be a little bit of early rock or whatever it was, some Elvis or Johnny Cash, all that kind of stuff. And I grew up thinking that all music was like that all around the world as a kid, And it was only as I got older and we traveled more and we became more world aware, I realized, no, that's not true, that you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to play like this, you've got to sound like this. And that's one of the reasons why, probably the main songwriter for my band, Michael never played an instrument. He was a great vocalist, great lyric writer, but he never played an instrument. So it felt to me a lot of the time for our albums and the creative part of it to think of new ideas, come up with different kind of styles or whatever. And I've always been like that. You know, I'm a fan of many different types of music, you know, including country and funk and rock and whatever it is, hip-hop, you know, some R&B, old-school Motown, you know, there's lots of things I really love. But I'll draw influences from wherever I can, you know, that something that excites me and I think will interest other people.
Yeah, it's funny to hear you mention all the different genres, because I was going to ask you, like, where you would categorize your solo stuff. Is it country? Is it folk? Is it Western? It's kind of alternative. The slide guitar kind of takes it to another level on what to categorize this. So it's so neat to hear you talk about how your upbringing was so versatile. So that makes perfect sense on the way your stuff comes out. I think that's great. Go ahead.
I appreciate that, because I think... if I can just add that I think, you know, I feel like a stranger in a strange land in some ways with what I'm doing now with country, because to me, you know, it sounds funny, but I live in the country. I'm a farmer. That's what I actually do in the background. And I find it really interesting because to me, a lot of modern country is more about suburbs where people live, whereas in the very early years of country, it was more about folk music and people who, you know, perhaps did work out on the land, and a lot of them were cowboys, big fans of cowboy music, you know, like, you know, you often hear Willie Nelson used to talk about he wants to be a cowboy. Well, I guess a modern cowboy, you know, you're wearing a baseball cap, you wear a t-shirt, and you drive a
V8. Right. Cowboys have changed. Right? That's good. I like that a lot.
Right. You know.
Yeah, we're probably going to focus our episode, like we talked about, on your solo stuff, as well as mainly heavy on NXS stuff, and probably going to cover Need You Tonight. Mediate what Need You Tonight runs into, the tribute to Bob Dylan's Homesick Blues with a cue card. What's your most memorable card, or what's the special date on those cards?
Interesting. I have to really go back and look at the video. My memory's pretty good, but not that good. I don't know. I maybe try not to hate, you got to forgive and move on, or you know, you it's, look, you know, I don't know what you believe, but, you know, you carry enough pain, it'll hurt you, you know?
Absolutely. It's good, man. That's a timely word. Yeah. All good.
It's been published that Atlantic Records wanted the band to ditch the Kick album entirely and basically record a do-over. And that, of course, was a massive misjudgment on their end. What was it about the album that Atlantic didn't like, if you recall?
I don't think they understood our album, Kick. You know what's weird, too, is that rather than me, you know, giving those guys grief for not understanding our album, you know, I think radio and the public got our album, okay? Mm-hmm, sure. And that's okay. But it could have been a real, real tragedy for us as a band if we'd actually gone and re-recorded and done other weird things. I don't think that would have been good at all. I think the NXS, the record producer Chris Thomas and Bob Clearmountain, who mixed it and mixed many other huge acts such as Bruce Springsteen, Rolling Stones, so many other great, great artists. And actually, Springsteen covered "Don't Change" when he came down to Australia. I'd sort of throw that in. I meant to say that before. But the main thing with Kick as an album, it's interesting because at the time, we were never a critical darling. You know, like we were never a band that people go, oh, you have to hear these guys. They're just awesome. Can't get enough of them. We used to have people say things like in the British media where they're crap and they're Australian. You know, we used to get it all, you know, not in a good way.
Yeah.
And I think it was a lot of it was people didn't really understand what we were doing sometimes. That's all. And maybe we were crap, but we were still strange. But we were trying, you know, and I mean, we're trying to sometimes not just to be different for different sake, but, you know, we had a lot of influence as a band that weren't straight eights, you know what I mean? Like in the era we came out of, it was very fashionable to be punk and kind of, you know, alternative and heavy, you know, in that sense. But we had other influences in the background of our lives, like funk and more poppy stuff and combining, like I said before, different styles of music. And that, I think, is what really confused the record label.
Yeah, it's good. I watched Never Tear Us Apart the other day, and I loved it. So I learned, I don't know how you feel about the way they put that together, whether that's a true adaptation or how involved you were in that. I know they used a quote from you at the end, which was wonderful, but I learned a lot of things in excess about by watching that. And I know you've been so kind with your time, Andrew. Thank you so much. We'll be respectful of your time. We had a board full of questions, but we'll save them for round two. But we do have one question that we ask everybody. You got time for one more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you're on tour either with, you do an NXS retouring or you do a solo tour. You go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I would always get a candy bar. I'd get a Three Musketeers bar. My mom would say you could have any candy bar you want, and that's the one I pick. I pick a Three Musketeers bar. It's the most ounces. What's your gas station snack food of choice?
Okay, it would have to be Lay's barbecue crisps.
Oh,
okay.
Delicious choice.
There we go.
Yeah, we don't have them down under, and but, you know, look, I'm happy to revisit part two of this. It's been great talking to you guys. And, you know, I really appreciate your support. And I hope you like my new music. And I'll keep putting it out if people keep wanting it. So off we go.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Take care, fellas.
Thanks, right, man. Bye-bye.
I'll see you. Cheers. Bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Andrew Ferris of NXS.
Oh, man.
To kick off season 10 of the Great Song Podcast. It is hard to imagine the world before this show started.
I know, right?
10 seasons ago, there was no internet. I remember it well. I remember it well. My family had just settled in the West. And
he forded the creek.
Yeah, I forded the creek. We tried to caulk the wagon and floated across, but little Richie caught
dysentery.
Didn't make it. And you know, I sent JP a telegram from my saloon.
That's awesome.
And I said, I have this idea for something called a podcast. What do you think? And he sent
Should
me back.
I bring my banjo?
Yeah. He sent me back a telegram on horse. 3 weeks later, I got the response, what's a podcast? And it took a long time to get it going, but it's seriously 5 years, 10 seasons.
Man.
I can't believe this is.
Huge thanks to Mickey Dolenz, Lars Ulrich, Jerry Rafferty.
Oh, man. We just need to do one episode, or at least part of a best of episode, that's just all the bits about random celebrities and musicians that we've done.
We can't do all apologies by Nirvana, as I hate it, but we should do all of our apologies to the people that we've given false credit.
That's right, yes. Man, it's been great. If you're just joining us for the first time, thank you so much for hopping on board the Great Song Podcast. If you're going to go back and start with...
Yeah, if you're just joining us, those jokes are funny. Go back and listen to the 200 episodes before this.
That's right. You can't help... I know it's like not entirely cool to sort of live in inside jokes, but over as many times as we've done this now, you can't help it some.
And play Ride the Top. Play Ronnie James Dio.
Oh, man. Okay, so... season 10 is going to be amazing. August is going to be amazing. We've got four straight number one hits from the 80s.
Man.
With interviews with artists who are, part of making the song. So it's going to be a lot of fun here in 80s August at the Great Song Podcast. So we hope you'll stick around. If you're new, just keep listening. If you want to go back, maybe start with episode like 15 or 16.
Give us through before a couple seasons.
Yeah, before
Don't
you go
start at the beginning.
Before you go all the way back to number one.
I recommend going back retroactively through season or like backwards. That's
start
wrong.
And go backwards.
Start and go backwards.
That's good.
That's what I would tell people.
That way you ease
into the seasons and then pick up some bonus episodes along the way.
But. And then you get to hear the origin of the joke after you've already heard the punchlines, right? And you go, oh, that's why that's funny.
It's the,
it's the Star Wars model, right? You go, oh, that's how that happened.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys next week on another fantastic episode. 80s August continues. Season 10 continues on the Great Song Podcast. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.